हरिः प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
bottom of 15. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states in Srimad Bhagavat Tatparya 2, let all things that are favorable for the service of Krishna become the objects of our worship. Let the abomination of mundane conceptions with regard to grass and creepers not affect us. It is not possible for us to become liberated by our own endeavor from our present material conceptions, material endeavors, and false ego. Lord Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivi hiesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya, that this material nature, which consists of three material modes, is very difficult to overcome. The Supreme Lord and the material energy, or maya, are two separate objects. The Supreme Lord is the absolute truth, whereas maya is temporary by nature. The temporary material conception of this world, created by maya, induces the conditioned souls to engage in fruitive activities. So interesting here is that it's the temporary material conception created by maya. So it means the material world, though it manifests temporarily, is an eternal principle. And material energy is always there, property is always there. Now sometimes it's manifest, the mahatta is there, and so there's manifestation. And sometimes there's not, but it's always there. But the material concept, in other words, the material concept means that it is separate from Krishna. That's material. We see it in relationship to Krishna, it's spiritual. We don't see it in relation to Krishna, it's material. You understand? So now, direct means we directly see the connection with Krishna. Indirect means we take it through so many stages to finally get it to Krishna. Material means it never gets there. You understand? So that's yes.
Demons in Gokul, they're dealing with internal potency, but in material consciousness?
Means the Lord's energy, see, it doesn't matter which energy you're dealing with, internal or external. If you don't see it in relationship to the Lord, you're dealing with the material concept. Yes. You understand? It's just like this. Let's say you're stealing diamonds, or let's say you're stealing a kid's, you know, piece of bubble gum. You understand?
Yes.
As far as stealing goes, it's the same thing. Now, it's just one you're working with better quality of material and one you're working with inferior quality. Not wanting to say make any personal comments about bubblegum here. You know, it is a sacred, principle.
Paraphernalia.
Yeah, like that. You know. Does that make sense? So that's what we're doing, is that the demons are working with internal potency. Seemingly, they're working with a superior energy. But because of their conception that it's separate from the Lord, they're actually dealing with the external energy. You understand? So, in other words, the internal potency means that potency that's manifest by yoga maya, you know, for the pleasure of the Lord.
Yes.
So that has an eternal manifestation. It's made of superior energy. The material nature is that which is manifest temporarily for the illusion living entities to deal with. Right? So then that is of inferior nature. Now that's just the situations. Then there's your vision of the situation. That can be spiritual and material. Just like in the material world, like Sukadeva Goswami, he only sees Brahman. It's all spiritual. Right? But the materialist sees all material. So the same way in the spiritual world, then the wives of the brahmanas, they're seeing the spiritual world. The brahmanas themselves are seeing the material world. Though they're dealing with superior energy. Right? Does that make sense? Yes. It goes both ways. Yes. Right? You always have these two, and they can go either way, because they're interchangeable. They're non-different from Krishna. And there's Surup Shakti. Right? So the Surup Shakti, then, depending upon your mentality, manifests one way or the other. Right? Now, for those who have the right mentality, they are placed in the situation of the internal potency. Those who are not are placed into the external potency. Because they're both potencies of the same person. Right? So yeah, that's the whole point. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, all right, so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's point is that whatever is favorable for Krishna, let that become the topics of our interest, our worship, our discussion. And those that are not, then we should just avoid those. Because it's not by our own endeavor we're going to become liberated, right? So this is the weakness if we put too much emphasis on the external, right? Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur makes the point that getting too absorbed in the traditional, Vedic trappings, is a distraction. Right? Everything has to be Vedic, everything has to be. It's a distraction.
Yeah.
It's a pious distraction, but it's still the distraction of the devotional service. So, why wouldn't an impious distraction be a distraction?
Yes.
Right? If it's no, it all has to be Western, we don't have to be anything, you know, all this Vedic stuff doesn't match nowadays, just that blah. Right? So it's the same thing.
Yes.
But it's actually of a lesser importance because it is of inferior nature. And not only that, its establishment of its importance is at the expense of the Vedic.
Yes.
So then that brings it into the system of actually it's a Mahapap. Mm-hmm. Reviling the Vedas is equivalent to intoxication.
Yes.
You understand? Mm-hmm. So those who say, oh, this Vedic, this and that, it's the same as breaking the rule of intoxication.
Yes.
Right? And of course, intoxication is a very modern Western kind of thing that everyone's popular with, so it fits in nicely.
Yes.
Yes. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.19.18, it is stated as follows. An intelligent person should see that any material endeavor, any material activity is subject to constant transformation, and that even on the planet of Lord Brahma, there is thus simply unhappiness. Indeed, a wise man can understand that just as all he has seen is temporary, similarly all things within the universe have a beginning and an end. So it doesn't matter where it is, even on the planet of Brahma, it's temporary, right? Which was interesting because that's the outstanding feature of his assembly hall. Is that you look at something, and it is amazing, way beyond any architecture you'll see anywhere else in the universe. But as soon as you notice it and have appreciated it, it changes. So it doesn't look the same anymore. The architecture is constantly changing. Right? So we'd say, wow, that's it. But the interesting thing is that's material nature. It's always changing. So it's actually not special.
Tricked again.
Yeah, tricked again. In the material, so whatever it is, it's should see that any material activity is subject to constant transformation. So this idea that, no, we have to fit in all these different things, you have to, but it's constantly changing. So what is the meaning of fitting in?
Yeah.
Yes.
Who is up to date? Maya. When it comes to clothes, yeah, Maya's up to date. Yeah. We've got all the things, yeah. But unless you've just walked off a Paris, runway, you're not up to date. So this whole thing of being, what does that mean? I remember as a kid, my mother was telling me that whatever's in fashion on the East Coast in America, it takes 2 years for it to come to the West Coast to be in fashion. Like that. Now maybe a little quicker because of the internet and stuff. But basically that's how it works. And that is what's already you know, happened in France. It takes some time to get to the East Coast. You know what I'm saying? So what is the meaning of in fashion? You know, or food, as we said, it's international cuisine. What does that mean? We can eat Lebanese, we can eat Mexican, we can eat Italian, we can eat, you know, good old, you know, English breakfast, but we can't eat Indian. That's because that's against our weather. What is this nonsense? You go into any airport in the world and they all sell shawls and pashminas. Where did that come from? Nebraska? No. You understand? So this is the problem, is that we get illusioned by this idea that the material world and material endeavor have a value, when they actually have no value. The only value is if they can be connected to Krishna, then it's a value. If it can't be connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter what it is, it's not a value. It's just a matter of what you want to use for Krishna. Do you want to use that kind of half old little shriveled up potato or the new fresh potato for Krishna? That's your option. The new one's the Vedic, the old one's, you know, what's not Vedic. That's what's offered. Using it for Krishna makes it perfect. Not using it for Krishna, doesn't matter how good it is, it's useless. So that's our position. So it's just that Krishna prefers this, that's why we use it. Like Prabhupada says, we're not vegetarian, we're Krishnatarian. Krishna's vegetarian, that's why we are vegetarian. Because we just take what Krishna eats.
Yes.
Right? That makes sense. So it's not about that. It's not about these good material things. Oh, we're nice, we're truthful, we're moral, we're this, we're that, we're upstanding. It's not about that. We're interested in that because it pleases Krishna. If it didn't please Krishna, we wouldn't care less. Yeah. So these are some very fine points. That's why this first canto is here, is removing the giving the basis for that. Then we're going to see it as it's applied. As Kunti's already said, all these bad things that have happened, let them happen again because they were all in connection with Krishna. They allowed us to remember Krishna. Well, now we're in this wonderful situation, we're emperors of the world, and now Krishna's going to go away. So what's the use?
Yes.
So there's this very different concept. You know, at first we get attracted by the religious aspect of material benefit. Right? And then, with time, then we start to see is actually it's not about that, it's about the spiritual benefit. Does that sound like sense? Yeah. So this is what we're looking for. This is what we're trying to establish. Like that. Yes.
We need to realize that we are not a material body, a spirit soul.
Yes.
Yes.
So you're engaging the spirit soul. You just happen to whatever body you use. It's just like going to the kitchen. If there's potatoes there, you cook potatoes for lunch. Right? If there's cauliflower, you cook that for lunch. You know what I'm saying? It's just a matter of what's there you cook. Not saying, oh, well, the spinach, you know, I can cook it like the potatoes, you know, because, you know, what's the difference? Why? We're not this body, Prabhu. We're not this spinach, Prabhu. You know, so therefore, you know, we can cook the spinach like the potato. It's never going to happen. We can talk all we want. You know, professors around the world can say what they want. It's just not going to happen. Illusion's illusion. Reality's reality. So the point is potatoes are dry. You know, spinach is right. As soon as spinach gets hot, there's a ton of water. You can't cook them the same. They're different in nature. But the point is whatever you have, that's what you cook for Krishna. It doesn't matter. This whole idea of one's better than the other. No. Daiva Varnashram, one position is not better than the other. The Brahminical mentality is superior. Because it's connected to Brahman. The others are material identifications. And that Brahminical mentality only becomes really viable when it comes to Vaishnava. Right? But at least there's something solid to work with. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In the material world, we acquire knowledge. This is all from the Purport. Sorry? Oh, so from here down is okay. So the purport ends with that. Okay. In the material world, we acquire knowledge through our senses, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and touch, as well as the mind. We try to analyze that accumulated knowledge with the help of pratyaksha, direct perception, and anuman, imagination. Actually, these attempts are the causes of our misfortune. Civilization of Vedic knowledge, while maintaining the sense of being, the doer falls under the category of material knowledge. So it's just pure, it's better material knowledge. It is stated in the Vedas, Jye vidye vedit jye para para cheti. Any knowledge other than spiritual knowledge is mundane knowledge. Right? So this is the Upanishadic viewpoint. It means other than transcendental, it's all mundane. Right? The general is you have transcendental, you have that which is supportive of transcendental, and then you have mundane.
Yes.
But in actuality, there's only transcendental and mundane. So if the mundane is not connected to the transcendental in reality, it's mundane. So this whole thing, no, but you know, we're all doing this, we're just being practical and all that, it's still mundane until you connect it. Saying, oh, we're just being practical, where's the connection? Did the word Krishna appear? Did I show any actual factual connection? No. So the point is, it's still mundane. It may be a nicer mundane, but it's still mundane. This is what the Bhagavatam shows. Yes.
If those who make money out of Bhagavatam recitation.
Yes.
So they are not in touch with spirit. It's mundane, even though Bhagavatam is Krishna himself.
Krishna himself, but how did the non-devotees see Krishna? And when Krishna walked into the wrestling arena in Mathura. There were a whole wide variety of ways of seeing him. Right? You know what I'm saying? And then you have up to the point of Dhritarashtra, who understands he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but just doesn't care. You know, but others just see him as, some of them saw him as an incompetent boy. You know, he looks good, he's dressed nicely. You know, what's this guy going to do in a wrestling arena? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's kind of like the, what do you call it? The, I don't know how you define it, but this, you know, this popular wrestling kind of thing, and the guys all have the fancy hair and all, you know, they really do it up, you know, like that. So there's always the question, is this real wrestling or not? You know? You know, so some will say, no, they're actual real wrestlers, but it's just, you know, there's some choreography. And some will say it's just they're actors, there's no wrestling at all, so...
Yes.
You understand? So the point is they look too good, then you think, you know, what? How practical they're going to be. You know? So that's the thing, is Krishna looks good, so how is he going to be practical in the wrestling arena? So some people see like that. So the whole point is pure devotion is pure devotion, and things that are not pure devotion aren't pure devotion. It's just facts. That's why this element, this Sankarshan element, is presented very regularly in Bhagavatam. It's just, this is the way it is. Then there's, but most is the interest of the Prajumna, the Adiruddha, the Vasudeva, is the element of rasa and the niceness, the attractiveness of Krishna, the affection for Krishna, the wonderfulness of the pastimes. Because that's the actual attraction for the living entity. Right? Because the living entity is complete, so there's Satchit and Ananda. So, of course, the intellectual aspect is important, it's part of their existence, but at the same time as the element of rasa and taste is more important. Right? Otherwise, then Vaikuntha would be more important than Vrindavan. Does that make sense? And even in Vaikuntha, they're all, oh, he's the supreme, you know, we're his servants and all that. But to what degree is yoga maya there? Right? because they're still comfortable to go up and serve him and fan him and do things for him. But if he's God, everything happens by his will. He can take care of everything. He's self-sufficient. There's nothing for you to do. You understand? So even in Vaikuntha, there has to be a serious degree of yoga maya just so that the devotees can function in rasa. Like that. It's just greater in Vrindavan. Yes.
Back to the point of connecting things to Krishna in the mundane.
Right.
Is it as simple as just changing the mindset, or does it have to follow through with some sort of action?
Naturally, if you've changed the mindset, you change the action. You know what I'm saying? But just starting with the mindset, even though the action doesn't start, hasn't happened, it's still a beginning. Because the perspective is actually the whole thing.
So just changing the mindset and not yet the action, is it half transcendental?
It means that it's in practice. Because that's what we're doing. In other words, we're hearing these things, we're engaging in devotional activities, but so much of the time we function still on the mundane platform. So it's just practice. Like that. So it's not a worry as long as that understanding is complete. So this idea is that, wow, who's doing this? Let's just be practical. That's nonsense. You know, it's like, you know, why are you encouraging the kid to walk? Look at the way he walks. He falls on his face. And this guy's stupid. He should just sit down all day. So everybody said, you know, this guy's talking. You call that talking? Tell the kid to shut up, you know? You understand? So no one will do that. But somehow another educated modern man thinks that's the way to deal with devotional service. It's not perfect, forget it. But their mundane is not perfect either. Right? Prabhupada said, intelligent. Says this one, I think it may have been within the Mullahs. It was talking to a younger Mullah. Mullah, you know, rich family. So that the senior Mullah asked the young man, says, are you intelligent? And then the first thing he did was check in his pockets.
Yeah.
Right? And then the senior Mullah said, what are you doing? I said, if you're intelligent.
Yes.
He said, if I'm intelligent, I'll have money in my pocket.
Yes.
Right? So that's the point. Who's got money? Who's talking? Who's got money? They don't got money. Why are they talking? All this mundane is so great. Who's got the money? Who's got position? Who's got authority? Right? So that's the whole point. So all this talk about modern, but they're not even successful in it. While in devotional service, they have a position, authority, everything like that. Stuff that they will never have in the material world. I mean, never. Never. So that's the whole point. That's the conditioning. Conditioning, that's just the way it is. You engage it, great. But don't try to say that it's special. Even, we just pointed out here, Brahma's situation is not that special. It's still temporary. Less temporary than ours, but still temporary. So that's the whole thing, is if it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes useful. It's not connected to Krishna, it is useless. You know? But the general principle is we start with the Vedic, try to find that, try to connect that. That's not available or it doesn't quite fit in that situation. Then we start taking alternatives. But we never just start with the alternative and say that we can't use the natural. You know, it's just like saying you have a screwdriver there and you have a knife there. And you got to, you know, put some screw in the wall. And so then you pick up the knife because you say the screwdriver, oh, that's too old-fashioned, right? They came up, the screwdriver, how long ago?
Very long ago.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so I'm saying that it's foolishness. So the point is you change the perspective. Having changed the perspective, then you contemplate it. Right? So in other words, you hear about this change in perspective, that everything's Krishna, so nothing's mundane. Right? In actuality, we think it's separate from Krishna. That's the mundanity. Material energy isn't mundane. It's just inferior. But this mentality, this illusion that Maya has put on it, that's the point. The temporary material conception of this world created by Maya induces the conditioned souls to engage in fruitive activities. Because fruitive activities just means it's for yourself, Krishna's not included. That's all. We change the mentality that Krishna is included, then it becomes special. So that's the whole point, is that changing the perspective that we see everything in connection with the Supreme. Right? We hear about that. So now we contemplate it, and then we try to see how to apply that in our life. So in applying it, then in the beginning we may be successful and may take a few attempts. That's the meaning of practice. So we're not worried that it didn't work. We're worried that if we're not making the endeavor to make it work. That's all. Does that make sense? It means someone who's successful, the problem is not that you weren't successful. The problem is to keep at it. Right? If you stop, then how can you be successful? You can't do anything if you... It means no result comes if you're not endeavoring. Does that make sense? So it's the endeavor that's important. So if that endeavor is in pursuance of pure devotion, then it becomes a value. If it's not in pursuance of pure devotion, then it's useless. So therefore, pure devotion has to be identified. We can't take it for granted that it's automatically. If it was automatic, there would be no need to write Bhagavatam. Because everything one requires to be successful in this world has been given in Mahabharata. But it doesn't define pure devotional service. Therefore, it alludes to it, but it doesn't define it. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is coming up. It is very difficult to gain freedom from the inauspiciousness caused by mundane knowledge. There is every possibility of inauspiciousness even in the topmost planet of this material world, known as Brahma Loka. So even the Vedic you have to be very careful of. The Vedic is simply saying, this is the facts, this is how it works. The mundane is observation of the material phenomena, and then from that trying to derive facts. Right? So the Vedic is very scientific, the other is quite speculative. Yes. Right? They get enough speculation together, they see patterns, and they start to call it science.
Interesting. Anuman was translated with imagination just before.
Yes. Yeah, because you have to imagine all the different things, but it should be imagined within a context of something that's logical.
Yes. Yes.
But it is imagination. Like that. So therefore, one has to be very careful. So that the point is, if it's a problem for Lord Brahma, on his position, why won't it be here with the mundane knowledge of here? Right? The speculative knowledge of here. Because the point is the person who observed, he's absorbed in how does he see the patterns? He's absorbed in one aspect. Right? Not in a broad aspect. So he sees that aspect. He doesn't see it in connection with other things. So it may have a function within that one, but not in the other aspect. Means it, not that it doesn't. It's a complete science, but they're unable to see it. And they're the smart ones. Mm-hmm. I'm saying? Very few scientists and very few academics are the ones that are creating the thought patterns. Mm-hmm. Most are commenting on that and playing with it, using their imagination on it. They speculate on it. But very few are actually analyzing and coming up with, you know, some solid, what you call science. Very few. So they're the smart ones, but they've only looked in that area. Right? So that's the importance of the Vedic knowledge, is that it's being looked at from the viewpoint of liberated souls. Right? Based on the knowledge as given by the Lord himself who created it.
Yes.
So the vision is broad. Now, the only weakness comes and it's not a weakness in the scriptures, it's our weakness, is that to explain it, this Vedic knowledge, you have to give examples. You have to give it in a context that the living entity will understand it. Right? Because the liberated souls all have one viewpoint, one perspective. It's the conditioned souls that have all these varieties of mundane viewpoints. So you have to give the example of the absolute in a context that someone with the mundane consciousness can relate to. You understand? So because of that, because it's been given in a particular context, therefore we'll think this is the only application. It doesn't apply broader than that. And that's why then when in explaining it, the great personalities have explained it to various individuals. So this person you have to speak in this way, that person in that way, and the third person in another way. So therefore it appears that the scriptures are contradictory.
Yes.
But they're not. They're just explaining the same absolute from different vantage points of conditioned living entities. Not of conditioned, but what of conditioned living entities could relate to.
Yes.
So it appears contradictory, but it's not. Does that make sense? You know, so like, let's say there's a mathematical problem. You would explain the same problem to someone in calculus one way, to someone in algebra another way, someone in arithmetic a different way. Same problem. So you think, oh, it's three different perspectives, and they're contradicting, they're not. So that's the whole point, is that mundane knowledge, right, if it's not connected to Krishna, is very can be very distracting. Right? Like, mudha. Right?
Yes.
Just mudha.
Yes.
Right? Okay. Not a dhamma.
Yes.
Right? Just low class. Just, you know, scrape the barrel off there, you know, like that. Sophisticated scrape bottom of the barrel. That's, you know mudha is unsophisticated bottom of the barrel.
Yes.
But, you know, sophisticated. And asura.
Yes.
Okay? Just straight up front in, my. Now, mayaya apritigyana.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligent person,
yes.
Intelligent but stolen by maya.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yes.
Mundane knowledge, so easily maya can steal it away. Very easily. The muda, he's really gross.
Yes.
The Naradhama is really, he's the upbeat, five-star hotel, first class. The suit, like that. So, the asura, straight out front, take over the world, like that. We're doing this, right? But the other one, he's got this idea of knowledge, some great, some wonderfulness, some idealness, but it's all stolen by my mind. Very dangerous.
Slippery.
Yeah, yes.
Maharaj, in Spanish, muda means the one who should not talk.
Oh. Yeah. Good connection. Yes.
So in this connection, Maya Pidyatiyana, he will be the Maya body.
Yes, he'll be the Maya body. Because the Maya body means you separate it from the Lord. You may talk about the Supreme, but it's not connected to the Lord. It's not actually connected to the Supreme. Your concept of the Supreme is not actually connected to the Supreme. That's Maya body. That's the interesting point. You know, how to sound as if you're transcendental and you're not.
It's a fine art.
Yeah, it's a fine art. Yeah. People pay a lot of money to go hear that. It's done well, but people pay. Right? Okay, learned persons know that this material world is temporary. All the endeavors of human beings within the 14 worlds are being baffled at every moment. The conditioned souls are always put into illusion, right? Even in the old world thinking, they know the material world is temporary. But generally when you're younger, you don't worry about it. It's when you get older and you're kind of too old to, like that, then you can give very sagacious advice to the youngsters, about how it's temporary, don't worry about it so much.
Yeah.
Worry about it, but not so much, like that. The conditioned souls are always put into illusion. By considering the phrase, Tejo Vadimuridam Yata Vinimayo, By the Supreme Lord, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion. As one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire, or land seen on water, one can understand that by seeing things in an apparent way, one often fails to see the actual truth. Because people don't really want to see the actual truth, because then they would have to get real about who they are as the soul. That's the weakness. So people really don't want to see. They want to see to some point, right? What is really emphasized in the social scene? You know, when we're talking about actual truth, right? Elements that can be made into juicy gossip. That's the, oh yes, no, but that's the truth. We want the truth. The truth is you're not your body and it doesn't matter. That's the real truth. The real truth is, what does it matter? You know, if a coconut falls off the coconut tree in the mirage, is there a problem? No. You know? There's no problem. So what's the problem if in the material world things go wrong? The problem is people identify with it, therefore it has to be dealt with. Yes. But it itself is just an illusion. So yes. What's the big deal? How is that truth?
Yes.
It may be facts, but it's not actual truth. Actual truth means connected to the Lord. You can't connect it to the Lord. It's just facts. It's not truth. People should stop using this term, truth. I just want the truth. No, I just want the facts. Truth is why you're worried about it in the first place. Unless one is favored by the Supreme Lord, one cannot see things in their true perspective. Right? So it's not by intelligence. That's the foolishness, is we think, I'm so intelligent, I'm seeing it in this right way. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, but only by favored by the true perspective. We should always consider that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is worshipable, and that his abode, Vrindavan, is similarly worshipable. The abode of Vrindavan is the place of Sri Krishna's pastimes. Krishna is the personification of all transcendental mellows. If, out of good fortune, we realize this fact, then we are sure to achieve the highest benefit. In the abode of Vrindavan, there is only one object of worship, and that is Krishna. He is served by the five kinds of servants, who are all subordinate to him. Question 20. So subordinate means that they're only interested in Krishna's pleasure, because in the actual interaction, we don't see Mother Yashoda as being subordinate, technically. Right? Yes.
Maharaj, can we say that in Vrindavan, focus is 100%, and everywhere else it's like kind of less?
No, because to come to the prema, you'd have to come to the point of samadhi. So their focus is complete. It probably, you'd have to say the intensity or the depth. There's a difference in that. Like that. So the intensity of prema is deeper. Because prema is you know, already, that's reality. So someone who's come to that platform, that's actual perfection. Just being liberated is not. But now there's another 8 levels of depth of prema. Like that. So that's where your different realms go. So Brindavan goes to that 10th level. The other realms don't get to that 10th level. Like that. That's it. So in that way you could say it's more, but it's not that the other ones is less. So it's already perfect. So that's the perfect, more perfect, most perfect. But it's not that it's, okay, this is standard, and then therefore it's less than standard. No, they're all standard. This is just the best of standard. Is that something? Yeah. Question 20 is answered by Arjuna in the next chapter. Okay, so the review questions and... The essay questions for chapter 14 will be given in the next chapter. I see. I saw there's some connection. Something settled. Okay, chapter 15. The Pandavas retire timely. Pratigya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 1:15:32-37. Upon hearing of Lord Krishna's returning to his abode, and upon understanding the end of the Yadu dynasty's earthly manifestation, Maharaj Yudhishthira decided to go back home, back to Godhead. Kunti, after overhearing Arjuna's telling of the end of the Yadu dynasty and disappearance of Lord Krishna, engaged in the devotional service of the Transcendental Personality of Godhead with full attention and thus gained release from the course of material existence. The Supreme Unborn, Lord Sri Krishna, caused the members of the Yadu dynasty to relinquish their bodies, and thus he relieved the burden of the earth. This action was like picking out a thorn with a thorn, though both are the same to the controller. The Supreme Lord relinquished the body which he manifests to diminish the burden of the earth. Just like a magician, he relinquishes one body to accept different ones, like the fish incarnation and others. When the Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, left this earthly planet in his self-same form, from that very day, Kali, who had been already partially appeared, became fully manifest to create inauspicious conditions for those who are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Maharaj Yudhishthira was intelligent enough to understand the influence of the age of Kali. Characterized by increasing avarice, falsehood, cheating, and violence throughout the capital, state, home, and among individuals. So he wisely prepared himself to leave home, and he dressed accordingly. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 15th chapter, hearing the lamentation of Arjuna and seeing the entrance of Kali, the king enthrones his grandson and giving up the kingdom, marches to death with his brothers. Right? So the essential point is when Krishna's there, everything's perfect. Krishna's not there, then there's no point. So since Yudhishthira are there to take part in the Lord's pastimes and assist, now that the Lord's gone, there's no point of their being staying. So now they're ready to go. Arjuna, grief-stricken and overwhelmed, his mind fixed on the Lord, reveals to Maharaj Yudhishthira that Sri Krishna, his dear friend, is now lost to him. He recalls incident after incident how Krishna empowered and protected him and the other Pandavas. Arjuna then speaks about the intimacy of his relationship with Krishna and how, in the absence of his Lord, he has now lost his powers and was defeated by some insignificant cowherd men. Arjuna relates to Yudhishthira the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. By remembering Krishna's instructions to him, Arjuna becomes situated in transcendence, beyond the modes of material nature. After hearing from Arjuna, Yudhishthira and Kunti decide to go back to Godhead. Sutta then philosophically explains the disappearance of the Yadus and the Supreme Lord. Understanding that Kali has entered, Maharaj Yudhishthira enthrones Maharaj Parikit as emperor, frees himself from the material conception of life, and leaves home to devote himself completely to contemplation upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After describing how the Pandavas followed Yudhishthira, and after describing the departure of Vidura, the chapter ends with the benediction, Shloka Anusharana, summary verses. Verses 1 to 26, Arjuna reveals the departure of Krishna, verses 27 to 49. Arjuna remembers Krishna's instructions and the Pandavas return to the spiritual world. Verses 1 to 26. Arjuna reveals the departure of Krishna. Sutta Goswami tells the sages that being extremely grief-stricken because of separation from Lord Krishna, Arjuna's mouth and heart had dried up. And because his voice had become choked up as well, he could not properly reply to Yudhishthira's inquiries at first. While checking his tears and breathing very heavily, remembering Lord Krishna and his well wishes, Sakyam, benefactions, Maitrim, intimate familial relations, Saudidam, and his chariot driving, Sartyadishu, Arjuna's affection for the Lord increased at every moment. 1-4, Srila Prabhupada explains. Krishna was not only a well-wisher of Arjuna, but actually a benefactor. And to make it still more perfect, the Lord tied him into a family relation by arranging Subhadra's marriage with him. And above all, the Lord agreed to become a chariot driver of Arjuna in order to protect his friend from warfare risks. And the Lord became actually happy when he established the Pandavas to rule over the world. Arjuna remembered all these one after another, and thus he became overwhelmed with such thoughts. So here, then Prabhupada is revealing that this arrangement of Arjuna marrying Subhadra was Krishna's arrangement so that the closeness between Krishna and Arjuna would be even more, because now they're brothers-in-law. Right? So technically they're cousins, right? But that's not brought out so strongly, because it has the aspect, but at the same time, because Kunti is coming, is grown up in another line. But at the same time, it's understood. But now he becomes a brother-in-law, right? So it becomes even more intimate. So we see that Balaram, because sometimes you wonder, why is Balaram making arrangement of things she'll marry to Duryodhana? Because he's functioning just on the regular social thing. Now here, his sister, right? Now, he's going to think the world of a sister. Now, if you marry your sister to the emperor of the world, is that a bad thing?
No.
No, that's a nice arrangement. Right? Yes.
But he's not a good person.
He's only a bad person in connection with the Pandavas. As a Kshatriya, he's a very good Kshatriya.
What about him and Krishna?
It's kind of a neutral thing there. It's not that he specifically has a problem with Krishna. He has a problem with the Pandavas. The problem with Krishna is he's connected to the Pandavas. But otherwise, Duryodhana can talk to Krishna and stuff like that. You know, these elements are there. But also we see is that arrangement was, you know, done a little bit earlier. You know, we see more that kind of not dealing nicely with Krishna coming later. You know what I'm saying? And he's a good student of Balaram. So therefore, there's also creating that closeness. You know what I'm saying? But there's that element, kind of the more social, just functioning within the Kshatriya society. So Balaram's doing that, so there's no fault like that. But here we see then Krishna's doing, creating this closeness, both socially, but then because of the devotional connection.
Duryodhana is a partial incarnation of Kali, is that right?
Well, it's directly an incarnation. He's being empowered by different personalities. See, is that when Duryodhana went, when he got so disillusioned, when the Pandavas were there, you know, near the end of their, just at some point in their stay, actually wasn't, I think it was before Arjuna went to the heavenly planets. I'm not sure if it was before or after. So they were in the forest, then Duryodhana through his spies figured out where they were, and they weren't so far away. So they thought, let's go and, you know, harass them. So they weren't going to directly harass them, they were just going to go there with all their opulence and just have a great time, you know, just nearby, so that they could feel bad about how Duryodhana has all the facilities and they have nothing. You know, so especially that will bother Bhima. Right, you know, it's not going to bother so much Yudhishthir, but Bhima it will bother. So it will give a good taste, right? But then when they go there, then it's after they were in the heavenly planets. It had to be after, because then the Gandharva, I can't remember which was his name, the Gandharva who Krishna, like Arjuna was, was friends with, and he was learning music and dance and everything. Chitranga or Chitrarata? I'm not sure. Which one of the Chitras. So then he saw this is going to happen because, you know, they also had their time to hang out in the lakes and stuff like that. So they would be hanging out there also. And then they saw this is their intent, so then they just came and captured them. And so there was no question. There's Duryodhana is there. You know, strength of 10,000 elephants, Karna with all his abilities and celestial weapons, and there was no fight. They just collected them up. It was just that much of a, you know, just no fight. You know, it's just like, you know, the world's topmost wrestler, you know, catches a, you know, 2-year-old. You know, it's like that. It's just, it's no contest here. And so then, that was, you know, their army against Duryodhana's. and then Arjuna alone goes and defeats them all. And so there's a moment of clarity in Duryodhana's vision, where he sees it's impossible to defeat the Pandavas. And that was just Arjuna. Throw in Bhima, throw in everybody else, because it's not that they're not good fighters. Yudhishthira, the Pandavas, as good as anybody, just Arjuna's better. Like that. So then he has this vision that I can't win. And his point is, if you can't win, then it's not worth making the endeavor, because Yudhishthira should be the king. I shouldn't. So he goes to the forest and sits down with the idea he'll just fast until death. Like that. So while he's in that meditation,
natural thing to do.
Tough choice.
It's an extreme.
The Kshatriya is.
Yeah. All or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, why do you think we had to hear stories about Kshatriyas? Because it's extreme. There's something happening. Because we see in the Katachart Sagara a lot of the stories about Vaishyas and Shudras, but it's not about something extreme, it's about something just uncultured.
Yes.
I told you the story about from Niti, that's given in Niti, about the lady who, she was so clever in the moment, what to do in the moment. You know, the thing about, she was having an affair with both the local judge and the judge's son. Neither of them knew about it. And one of them comes to the house, and then at the same time, the second one comes to the house. You know, and at the same time, the husband comes back. Right? So, I mean, that's tough. You know, one's enough. Yeah, both there. So then she arranges it in such a way that the husband doesn't understand anything. The judge goes walking out of the house, you know, in an angry mood. Like that. Doesn't know why, just knows he's supposed to take a stick and walk out angry as anything and this and that. And then the husband, seeing him walking out, then he's not like, why is the judge at the house? You know, it's just like, you know, what's up with him? And he says, well, hey, you know, because he's looking for his son. You know, and he wants to kill him. He upset him about something and that, so he came here to hide. You know, and then he came and he couldn't find him and all that, because I thought, you know, his son, you know, he shouldn't behave like this with his son, like that. And so then the husband's thinking, oh, okay, you've done a nice thing, you protected the son, and this and that, and the judge, and this and that, so it all goes on like that. So, yeah. So that's the examples you get in Shastra from Vaishyas and Shudras. So, you know, valuable, but not exactly what you'd call noble, or, you know. So you know, therefore, the stories are generally about the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. And because they're so extreme, they're interesting. Right? Everybody on the planet has kids. They're all having kids. But somehow or another, you know, when, you know, whatever it is, so William has a kid, you know, or I say the bounce off the walls. Angelina Jolie has a kid that everybody's got to know about. They'll pay millions to get the first picture. Right? But everybody's having kids, so that's the whole point. So therefore the Shastras use these because they have such extreme.
He went into meditation. Duryodhana wanted to end his life.
Oh, I want to go back to the story. So this is the story of the story. It's a good day, right? Yeah. Be less torture, right? You know, and Pankajangri was saying about torture. What was the word?
Repetition.
Repetition, no, but what was the Sanskrit?
Tika.
Huh?
Tika,
okay, yeah. The explanation. It's repetition or it's torture. Yeah. So. Okay, so then he sits down and all that, and while he's in that, he goes, you know, into that meditation. Then the demons come and catch him and bring him down to the lower planets. And they say, you can't do this. You can't kill yourself. You're our representative. Hey, we're depending upon you. Like that. And it's kind of like, well, I can't do anything. Look at these Pandavas. You know, they just defeated... We got defeated so easily by the Gandharvas, and Arjuna easily defeated them. So what's our position? says, don't worry, all of us demons here will empower. And then they say, which demons will empower the different personalities? So actually, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, it was a proxy war between the demigods and the demons. Like that. So there was more going on there than just the fratricidal war. That was actually a war of the universe. Like that. Does that make sense? Because all the demigods, they've all come as the different personalities, you know, on the one side. And then the demons, then they're empowering all these others. Does that make sense? So Kali is one of them. He also is a demon, I think. No, I don't think he was Kalanemi. Kalanemi was Karna. Can't remember what demon he was, but he was a demon. He was Is that okay? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And the Lord became actually happy when he established the Pandavas to rule over the world. Okay. And above all, the Lord agreed to become a chariot driver of Arjuna in order to protect his friend from warfare risks. And the Lord became actually happy when he established the Pandavas to rule over the world. Arjuna remembered all these one after another, and thus he became overwhelmed with such thoughts. So he actually became happy. Because, you know, the actual, not just, you know, yes, oh, so nice, you know, like this and that. Who's this guy? You know, it's not one of those, right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments, Sakyam is mutual affection and mutual helping each other. Maitrim is Shakya mixed with Dasya. And Sharidam is Shakya mixed with Vatsalya. Okay. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the need of the acharyas.
Yes.
Otherwise, how would one figure that out? Okay. What is it? The benefactions. Okay. So that means there's the service and familiar saridam, right? Is mixed with vatsalya. So you have that. In a senior position, taking care.
Yes.
Arjuna. Yes.
This Arjuna is with Krishna in a Maitrim relationship. Sakyam is with Dasya.
Means there's Sakyam. It's just that the point is it's mixed with both. In other words, all four aspects are there with Arjuna. That's why it's a unique relationship by bringing out here, is that he's a friend of Krishna. But he has the equals aspect, there's the junior aspect, there's the senior aspect, and there's the intimacy aspect. So all four aspects are in one person, like that. While you see, like in Vrindavan Leela, then certain cowherd boys are in certain relationships. You know, that way then you can get more, all this taste. But then here in Dwarka, then it's all with one, because the two are non-different. Naran and Ryan are non-different, so therefore naturally all these four would be there. Like that. So that's the unique. That's why Arjuna's as a relationship is an outstanding relationship. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. In what way would he be superior to Krishna?
Generally, it's gave here is that Krishna with him. But then, like, he calls him Yadava and stuff like that. But that's just part of the equal. Because equal, then there'll be chivalry. You know, there's that little, you know, but at the same time, you can do everything together. Does that make sense? So, yes.
The example is given on the chariot driver.
Chariot driver, that's where Krishna is serving. Yes. Like that. Becomes the messenger of these kind of things. So he's serving. Like that. But at the same time, is then he's. Arjuna remembered all these loving exchanges one after another, and thus he became overwhelmed with such thoughts. At last he answered his brother, O King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who treated me just like an intimate friend, has left me. And thus my prowess, which was astonishing even to the demigods, is no longer with me. 5. Okay. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should not be puffed up because of the powers borrowed from the Lord. Right? So in other words, that surrender to the Lord, that's where your power comes from. Like that. This idea of power comes on its own. It doesn't have much taste. It doesn't last very long. Power that comes from relationship, intimacy of relationship, that power has much more greater lasting. You know, as pointed out, you know, is the saying, behind every great man there's a woman. So that means because of that, then you see this external power. Right? So Arjuna, because this connection with the Lord, that surrender, that relationship, therefore you saw the power. When it's gone, then that power is not there. It's just natural. It's just... In Bhagavad Gita 10:41, the Lord says, anyone specifically powerful and opulent in wealth, strength, beauty, knowledge, and all that is materially desirable, is to be considered but a product of an insignificant portion of the complete whole of my energy. No one, therefore, can be independently powerful in any measure without being endowed by the Lord. So this idea is that I'll get it myself, or we're getting this separately from the Lord, is a total illusion. So there's no question that any system other than that connected with the Lord will actually give results. It can't. Why? Because the power that someone's manifesting is the Lord's power. It's just he gives this to everybody. See, we have this kind of idea, there's the material world and then there's this alternative of spiritual. All there is spiritual. And we've taken the alternative viewpoint to not see it that way. That's the difference. Yes.
So we mentioned before that the karmis, they don't have qualities on their own. It's all borrowed qualities.
Yes.
And here we see devotee, he has also borrowed qualities from Krishna. So what's the real difference?
Because the quality of the soul, that means the good, means here we're talking about opulence. So the karmis, the qualities that they have and the opulence they have are both borrowed. From the devotee, the quality is the natural manifestation of themselves. And then the opulence, that's borrowed. Because opulence will always be borrowed because it's not us. The quality, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's say the karma is determined and from that he does well in business and becomes very wealthy.
Yes.
So the quality of determination and the wealth are both borrowed. But for the devotee, the determination is the nature, is the quality of the soul. And the wealth is borrowed.
Yes.
Okay. In the beginning, one may be working with one's conditioning. But the good qualities that one is engaging that conditioning, that's coming from the soul. And it's also, of course, by the Lord's grace. Like that. So everything. But here it's being pointed out is that everything's coming from the Lord. So there's no such thing as someone having it separately. So this idea that we can have separate systems of success without the Lord is actually bogus. These systems only work because they're in line with some aspect of the laws of the Lord. Therefore, the Lord being pleased, one gets that bit of potency. But to think that it's coming because this is the modern way to do it or this is how you do it nowadays, that's totally bogus. It's that you follow God's law, the eternal principle, that's why it works. Otherwise, if it was just a matter of that, why with so much intelligence and thought, people haven't worked out a success system that always works? Because it's they're only, one, seeing part of it, and two, they're not connecting it to the Lord. So someone sees one aspect, someone sees another. So it's always faulty. So it will always be lost. And it's just karma. You've done the good work, you get the good result. You don't do good work, you don't get the good result. And how much good work you do, that's how much good result you get. You know, you get money, you take care of the money nicely, then it lasts longer. You get the money, don't take care of it nicely, it disappears. Yes.
So does it mean as devotees we should concentrate on developing the qualities, actually?
We focus on devotional service to please the Lord, knowing that these qualities are ones that we should use in that service. So we don't have to separately try to gain them. They will come in the execution of our devotional service. Like that. They come together. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that was like the previous point that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was making. We don't make any endeavor separate from the Lord. Even if it's a good one, even if it's a Vedic one. You know, it's that we don't make those endeavors if they're not connected to the Lord. Because otherwise, just to be good and nice and pious and moral and upstanding and truthful and all, what's the use? It's just ornaments on a dead body, like that. They're not real. Is that, yes.
Previously, you mentioned that when somebody's not surrendered to the Lord, whatever qualities they have disappears.
Yes.
Arjuna was. He was a pure devotee.
No, but his qualities are still there.
Yes. But he couldn't defeat those.
But that's his prowess, that's his potency. In a sense, there's a difference between the qualities and the power that you have. Someone can be a really, really nice guy, but let's say doesn't have much ability to do things. Another is a really nice guy and he's very expert at getting things done. So the nice guy-ness stays. It's just a matter of how much opulence you're manifesting or not. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say someone can do an activity. They can drive a car, okay? And you have two people, they have equal ability in driving the car. Now they can, one drives, you know, very nicely and conscientiously, one doesn't. One has attitude and pride. The skill is the same, the attitude's different. See, they're two different things. Just like you have somebody, he's a really nice guy, but you know, you wouldn't necessarily want to be in the car with him because he's always being so nice, he's not necessarily looking at the road. You know what I say? You had those people that they're driving, they're talking, yeah, this and that, and now and again they might look at you, but like that. But some people, they really feel it's proper and personal. Oh, you know, yeah, you know, we really feel it. Kind of like, can you look at the road, please? You understand? So the two connected but separate entities. So you can have one and not have the other. So therefore, the Lord can give ability and take it away. But the qualities remain.
Yes.
Does that make sense? But generally speaking, if Krishna gives an ability, he doesn't take it away. Like that. Like someone mentioned, I forget what it was that they've done. It was in the 90s. Yeah, 90s was when they'd have all these Prabhupada reunions, Prabhupada disciple reunions, and like that. So they had one in England, and Ribati Nandana, Maharaj, he had been gone for 20 years. But when he came back, then, you know, he came to the reunion like everybody else. And then they asked him to speak, and then those who knew him from before said, his speaking was exactly the same, you know, realization, power, everything. So, because he had had that before, Krishna had given him that ability, so it didn't go away. Yes, and it's not lost. But if Krishna wants, he does. But here, it's more, we can see is that the principle is he's empowering. But here, it's more, it's just Arjuna's not inspired. I know. But at the same time, is, you know, the Lord is showing this principle that He's giving the power. So it's not that we should be proud and think, no, it's mine. I did this. No, it's only by Krishna's grace. So we have to be very, very careful about that. Because otherwise we can make some serious mistakes. And then, but we don't have to worry. Krishna will take care of it by taking everything away or making it very difficult. And then we wonder, why is it like this? And why is these things happening? I'm serving Krishna. Like, yes, we are serving Krishna, but the things aren't going well for the mixed aspect. Right? You know, the pure devotion, then Krishna appreciates that part very much. It's the mixed element that one gets a reaction.
Funny enough, the part that we're attached to.
Yes, that's the part, and that's the part we know. So why doesn't he make the mixed part go so nicely? He says, no, it doesn't work like that. Because Maya manages that part. Right? Yeah.
We see for the pure devotees, it's not a problem when things are not going nicely, yes. and they yes. continue their devotional service. Yes. But for yes. neophytes, no japa, yes. no morning program, like you know, yes. it's like really dropping, like really down.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the thing, is one has to try to get beyond that. That's why it's recommended that as quick as possible you get to the Madhyama platform. The neophyte platform is not so stable. Yeah, come on, pick up the pace there. Come on. You can do it, you can do it. Bhakti coaching.
You should do a seminar for this.
Yeah. Yeah, get all the cliches and work them all in. It'd be funny.
So is Bhakti Vijayapurna Swami giving this seminar? Yeah.
The funniest part is many would take it really seriously. Oh, that's awesome. So good.
Be great.
Yeah.
All right, in yesterday's class, Shruti Kirti Prabhu, he was saying that when anybody who's leading Prabhupada, you give basically the same answer. How's the Mangalarti? How's the japa? How's the service?
Oh, okay.
And he said he just received so many letters with two categories, either management or problems, personal yeah. problems. Mm-hmm. And he said by the time he could already answer for Prabhupada.
Yeah. You know exactly what he's going to say. Because what does it come down to? It comes down to management means I am the controller, yeah. right? Personal problem means I figured out I wasn't the controller. And so then once you get a little confidence that, yes, well, I'm not the controller here, but this way I'm the controller, then again, you know.
If I am.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. No one therefore can be independently powerful in any measure without being empowered, endowed by the Lord in any measure. So even just that, you know, you can scratch your nose like that. It's yeah. still the Lord's empowered, you know. The power of the nose scratching Shakti. When the Lord descends on the earth along with his eternal, ever-liberated associates, he not only displays the divine energy possessed by himself, but also empowers his associate devotees with the required energy to execute his mission of incarnation. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita 4:5 that the Lord and his eternal associates descend on the earth many times, but the Lord remembers all the different roles of incarnations, whereas the associates, by his supreme will, forget them. Similarly, the Lord takes away with him all his associates when he disappears from the earth. Right, so this, even the Pandavas retiring, is the Lord taking them. So he inspires them to think in that way. And so then they go. The power and energy which were bestowed upon Arjuna were required for fulfillment of the mission of the Lord. But when his mission was fulfilled, the emergency powers were withdrawn from Arjuna, because the astounding powers of Arjuna, which were astonishing even to the denizens of heaven, were no longer required. And they were not meant for going back home, back to Godhead. Right? So it's just for doing that service. So the point is, there's the attitude of service, and then what one does.
Yes.
So that what one does, that's not the essential element. It's the mentality, because that may change, especially with us, because we're functioning with a conditioned nature. So what we do here and what we do in the spiritual world generally will be yes. something very different. Yes. Sometimes that idea comes up, well, I want to be that in the spiritual world, so yes. do I have to do those things here?
Yes.
You know, no, you have to develop the attitude of service.
Yes.
That's the whole point. And these other things, they come and go as is the thing. Because we see in the past that somebody does something very special and wonderful. And then another time, they're not the one. Someone else is doing that very special. So it's just, you know, for the Lord's pastimes, what will make him happy. If endowment of powers and withdrawal of powers by the Lord are possible even for a great devotee like Arjuna, or even the demigods in heaven, then what to speak of the ordinary living beings who are but figs compared to such great souls? Like that. The lesson is, therefore, that no one should be puffed up for his powers borrowed from the Lord. The sane man should rather feel obligated to the Lord for such benefactions, and must utilize such power for the service of the Lord. Such power can be withdrawn at any time by the Lord. So the best use of such power and opulence is to engage them in the service of the Lord. Because they may go at any time, so while you have them, use them for the Lord. Yeah. But if you use them for yourself, then definitely they'll disappear. Right? So it's still the principle, you can have it, but you know it's not yours. Yes. As soon as you think it's yours, you don't have it. Yes. It's just the way it works. Arjuna's dejection, however, was not caused by the loss of his powers, but by the painful separation of his dearmost friend. I have lost him, whose momentary absence would render all the universes void, just like lifeless bodies. Right. So here it's not just the world seems empty. You know, the boy goes off or the girl goes somewhere, so then the world feels empty. You know, but here he's saying the universe, not just the universe, all the universes, right? There's, you know, so like that. So we can understand this separation is greater. Srila Prabhupada explains the philosophical reason for Arjuna's depression. So I guess it depends how the amount of affection is according to the amount of how much void is there. So if you just feel that the house is empty, so then there's that much. If you feel the city is empty, or the country is empty, the world's empty, like that. Interesting. So this is all the universes. Like that. So that's serious. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada explains the philosophical reason for Arjuna's depression. Factually, for a living being, there is no one dearer than the Lord. The Lord expands himself by innumerable parts and parcels as Swamsa and Vibhinamsa. Paramatma is the Swamsa part of the Lord, whereas the Vibhinamsa parts are the living beings. As the living being is the important factor in the material body, for without the living being, the material body has no value. Similarly, without Paramatma, the living being has no status quo. So just as the body is considered dead without the soul is considered basically dead without the Paramatma. So if we're not Krishna conscious, it's as good as being dead. It's just animated dead bodies. You know? So basically it's a matter of, you know, dead or zombie dead. You know? That's the point. Right? So actually they're addressing a certain philosophical point in the zombie, you know, concept. You know, in other words, here's a living entity that's not God conscious, so they're just like a zombie.
Yes.
And, you know, no?
People seem to
isn't
like
that the real background for the Yes. Similarly, Brahman or Paramatma has no locus standi without the Supreme Lord Krishna. This is thoroughly explained in the Bhagavad Gita. So, in other words, Bhagavatam is not enough that you connected it to the Lord. So that's why using this indirect method of connecting everything in the life, you know, to the Lord, has its limit. Because the point is it has to go back to the Lord as a person. You can say, okay, you know, I like this particular aspect of the mundane. And so then I'll engage in a Krishna service. Mm-hmm. So as a start, that's very, very good. You'll get purified, you get realization, everything. Mm-hmm. But if you hold on to the attachment that, no, because it's connected, it's fine, I don't have to move beyond it, then that will be a weakness, because why aren't you moving beyond it? Mm-hmm. Not because of Krishna as a person, because of yourself. Yes. So the point is if, okay, I like this particular aspect, and I'm doing these particular aspects, if it's something that is one's duty, so one's using it naturally for the Lord, then it remains. Because then, so then you'd have, let's say, you know, the first example is, let's say, maybe nice cars. So he has nice cars, but you use them for Krishna service. You go, you pick up the swamis in your nice car, so it's good. like that, you know, Rath Yatra's there, Jagannath has to go out to the place, so then they use your car to take Jagannath. So it's engaged nicely, it's good. But therefore, if you think that it's fine, you know, having nice cars, but that's because of your own self. But let's say like Grihastha Ashram. So then the initial element is because of ourselves, what we're going to get from, and we connect it to Krishna. But at some point then it's, I just do this because it pleases Krishna. So then it's a matter of performing all the duties that go with the Grihastha Ashram, even though one doesn't have something to gain from it oneself. Does that make sense? So then that's the natural progression. So therefore, if Brahman and Paramatma as initial stages of understanding in the indirect is fine, but eventually you have to take it to Krishna as a person. Therefore, so many things are given up. Right? The idea is, well, if they're pure devotees, why do they have to give up their position on the material platform? Because at some point it's just, it's being done for Krishna, but the absorption in Krishna as a person is so great that there's no function for it anymore. Right? In other words, it has a function as long as it's beneficial in the mission, and one is advancing by it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? So if either of those is not important anymore, there's no need for it anymore. You know, just as here, Arjuna's prowess is not necessary anymore. The mission's finished. So, yes.
Would that be something like if I do my duty because it's my duty, or I do it because my duty pleases Krishna?
Yes. It means, in other words, I'm doing because it's my duty. At some point, has to be given up because you're not the conditioned nature, so ultimately that duty is not your duty. Now the principle of doing things to please the Lord because it's His order, that remains, that will remain. But then that's then in majesty. Then we're being given the opportunity to do it because it pleases Him as a person. It's not so much because He's God. You know, so it goes a step beyond that. So you have to know what aspect remains and what's lost. The devotion that, let's say, for a particular service, one might, one would be, if somebody asks you immediately, you agree. Another service, you might have to think about it. Right? Does that make sense? So, that it's not that particular service that you're willing to do, it's that service is more special or better. What's important about it is you're willing to do that without any thought. You know? Does that make sense? So that's where you're advancing very nicely. And the one you have to think about, that's more of a kind of a sadhana aspect.
Yes.
You know, so slowly, slowly, you'll intellect, no, it's good to do, I should do it, then you do it, like this. Does that make sense? But it's not the particular of the service, it's the attitude in the service. Because it, for one person, where they're spontaneous is where the other person is, it's fighting. So it's not about that. It's not about the particular service. It's about the attitude. Mother just showed it's not about her service. It's about her attitude. The service follows the attitude. Right? So that's why here we perform our duty. We have a right to do our duty, but it's not that we identify with it and are attached to it. It's just that this is what I have. You know? That's all. You know? One guy has a sack of potatoes, so he's the, you know, potato cooking man. Another one has a sack of cauliflowers, he cooks that. You know what I'm saying? It's just, this is what you have, that's what you use. But the point and thing is that you're doing it for Krishna. That's the real. Does that make sense? That's what remains, that's what's eternal. The other one is temporary, so that's why at some point then it's shown here that even that has to be given up. So the conditioning, you know, has its point, but at some point everyone's willing to give it up. Whether it's necessary or not, that's another thing. But generally the practice is it's given up. Therefore, the vanaprastha and sannyas stages of life is that one gives up that sense of that ownership and those kind of elements. And that one's only engaged in aspects of renunciation and ultimately sannyas. Right? Okay. But that principle of sannyas can be practiced at any stage, so one may already be at that stage, you know, at its brahmacharya grihastha. Does that make sense? So then that giving up will just be his example for others. Like here, for Arjuna, it's not necessary to take away the power. Yadavas, yes. Arjuna, no.
That would connect to that first Sarva Dharma. Sarva Dharma Paritajaya.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you see, for Yadavas, many of them, they're demigods. So in that way, they're devotees of the Lord, they're associates of the Lord in that aspect of the universe. So they've come for that. So for them to stay, that would be a burden. Right? You see, Indra gets too much power, he becomes a burden. He always does something foolish, and so Krishna has to correct it. Right? So now you have the whole Yadu dynasty, all the demigods are there, so it would be a burden on the earth. Right? Because without Krishna there, then what's their point? What's the point of their power, this and that? So either they won't be inspired, so how will they do so they won't run things nicely, or they'll want to, you know, take over the, because they could take over the world, but they don't. Of all the kingdoms, Dwarka is the most powerful, there's no question of it. But they play a subservient role as members of the Moon Dynasty. But otherwise, if they wanted to be emperors, who would stop them? You know? So therefore. But for Arjuna, then it's giving example. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
As long as it's on the topic.
Yeah. It's on the topic. You said one should give up at a certain point. One should give up. And how do you do that? How do you give up? That which in the beginning helps you, and then you just become attached to it, and then.
Giving up is, well, the thing is in between doing it because you're attached to it and giving it up, in between is a necessary step. It's called doing it because you're supposed to. Doing it because you're supposed to do it. Because it's your duty. You understand? That's the stage that most people miss. Therefore, much of the time they're giving up isn't actually necessarily that successful. Does that make sense? Let's say the grihastha, he gets married because of, you know, his idea of what it's going to be like. Then when he gets married, he starts to see more of a reality that, you know, you read about, you hear about, but of course that's not going to happen to me. Right? And so then his mind turns to renunciation, and then he, you know, leaves the family and, you know, moves to Vrindavan and not involved in anything, and 10 years later you see him riding down the road in a rickshaw with some new Russian girl. I don't know why, it's always got to be Russian. Does that make sense? So the point was is, because the middle stage wasn't there. The middle stage is that I am a grihastha. It's favorable for me to be doing these things because what's happened, they've only gotten the understanding, not the realization. Yeah. But in the West, in the modern academy, there's no distinction made between the two.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, most don't understand realization means change of lifestyle, not change in externals. So the change in lifestyle, if you realize that there's nothing to gain in grihastha life, but one still has duties, then one performs the duties because one's supposed to. And as we see, is someone who's on that platform of realization, they can actually do it better than the person who's attached. Because the person is only doing it because he's attached. If he wasn't attached, he wouldn't do it. While here you have someone doing it because they're supposed to do it, they'll do it better. Right. So that includes everything. So therefore, the activities, the mentality, all that. So they'll be a very nice grihastha. But they're doing it not because they have something to gain, because this is part of their service to Krishna. You understand? Someone who can do that, now they can move to that third stage, which is giving that up. Because you can't really give up. How do you give up something you can't do? You go into the kitchen, you cook, it's bad, and then you give up cooking. You know, oh, they're so renounced, they gave up cooking. Yeah, but they were a terrible cook. You know? The guy goes, fails in business, I'm giving this up, it's all Maya. What's the, yes, okay, great. But that's not the example is the six Goswamis. Here's the prime minister and the treasurer of one of the largest kingdoms in India. They gave that up. They're top class Brahmins. They gave that up. They're great scholars. They say they're fools. Right? Sanatana Goswami could speak so many languages fluently. right? To keep up a conversation that he would be intellectually fulfilled, he had to have 30 Brahmins, you know, scholars sitting in the discussion. Now that's something to give up. Does that make sense? So first you have to have it before you give up. So you can't give up the Vedic culture. Oh, we don't care for this. You know, we're just on the... But unless you have it, what is the meaning? You get either, because the point is you see the real renunciation because they can't give up the Western. So that means they're not actually renounced. They're giving up something you don't have, that's not, you know, it's like, you know, I renounce all of your money. You know, I didn't have it in the first place. So that's the whole thing. You understand? So that middle stage of being able to do something because of duty, that then gives rise to actual renunciation, because that's where it is. I'm doing it for myself, but I'm willing to give the results. Then after a while, I'm doing it just for Krishna. So it goes from attachment to renunciation to sannyas. So the difficulty is most don't take those stages. They take the externals, but it's not the externals. It's the mentality. Therefore, you see, it's like Arjuna, Yudhishthira, they're sannyasis as grihasthas, because it's all for Krishna. Like that. But, you see, as far as grihastha goes, you don't get much better example of grihasthas than the pandavas. Right?
Yes. The point is to act according to our realization.
Act according to our realization, yes. But within the framework of our duties. Yeah. Because if we don't have, let's say, realization in our duties, still we should be doing them. Mm-hmm. Because from doing them, connected to Krishna, we'll get knowledge. That knowledge by practice will turn into realization. So that's why Krishna always says, perform your duties in knowledge for Him. Right? And then remembering Him. So it just gets more and more personal. Because for Him, because He's the Lord, so I have to follow His line. Remembering Him because of Him, the person. Right, so it has that element of affection. Similarly, Brahman or Paramatma has no locus standi without the Supreme Lord Krishna. This is thoroughly explained in the Bhagavad Gita. They are all interlinked with one another, or interdependent factors. Thus, in the ultimate issue, the Lord is the summum bonum, and therefore the vital principle of everything. So, in other words, Krishna is the vital point of even his godness. Because, you know, God is kind of what you do, you know. In the next group of verses, 7-21, Arjuna recollects different incidents when he received Krishna's special mercy. It was only because He had mercifully empowered me, Arjuna continued, that I was able to vanquish all the princes at Draupadi Swayamvara and conquer Indra and his host of wrathful demigods, so that Agni could devour the Kandava forest. So here's another example as he's defeated. He defeats the demigods, and at the same time when he goes there, he defeats the Navadakavachas? Navadakavachas. Who the demigods couldn't defeat. Right? And then he defeats the Gandharvas. So there's plenty of, truth here that Duryodhana could have took an advantage of. And because of Maya Dhanava's gratitude at being saved from Kandava fire, we Pandavas obtained by the Lord's grace our wonderful assembly house where all the princes assembled to pay tribute to you at the Rajasuya Yajna. Right? Because it was by Krishna's grace, because Maya Dhanava said, what can I give? And he says, we can do something for Yudhishthira. Yeah. Right? You know, because otherwise Arjuna was going to kill him because he was in there. But Krishna said, no, he gave shelter. And then, naturally, because he'll give a benediction. But Arjuna doesn't want one. So then Krishna says, okay, then get one for Yudhishthira. Like that. So by Krishna's arrangement. Because he's an architect. And then they said, okay, what to do? Then Krishna told them what to do. Right? And Krishna even suggested the pond in the middle, in the Brahmastan, that will destroy the descendants. Right? So it doesn't take effect for 14 years. Right, so while the Pandavas were living there, there's no effect.
Yes.
But when Duryodhana took over, then the effect, you know, then because Dhritarashtra was the king, then his sons would be destroyed.
Okay. He's got it covered.
Yeah, so it's all about Krishna's arrangement. You know, because otherwise you don't do that. Maya Dhanva knows that. But then Krishna suggested it, so Maya said, okay, he suggested it, we'll do it. But otherwise he wouldn't do it. Yeah.
Just a technical point. When you say it doesn't take an effect, it's building up and then...
It gives its fruit after 14 years.
Fruit. Yeah. It's just like it said that if you put salt in milk, you get leprosy.
Yes, it's not that the moment you take it, then you look in the mirror and then you look like Michael Jackson or something. You know, it takes some time.
For him, it also took time.
Yeah, it took time. Yeah, see, it takes a while.
Maybe he drank milk.
No, that was something else. But I'm just saying, you come out looking extremely. So it's a condition of the liver. In other words, the salt and the milk does something to the liver, so the liver doesn't function completely perfectly. So then when that happens, then you start to get those spots. You can see them on people. If you check, many times people have them. They have a few spots.
Yes.
And then depending, you can tell how good their liver is doing by whether they're getting whiter or whether they're starting to get pink. You know, so like that. It takes time. So it was worked out that the Pandavas could enjoy the place, but the effect, the bad effect, would come to Duryodhana. Hmm? Yes. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada describes Draupadi Swayamvara and the burning of the Kandava forest. Draupadi was the most beautiful daughter of King Drupada, and when she was a young girl, almost all the princes desired her hand. Because you always have, at any one time, the girl that everybody wants to marry. So Draupadi was that girl. The previous generation, it was Kunti. Kunti was the one that everybody wanted to marry. Right? So, but Pandu, he was the, you know, he conquered all the other kings, so he's the one that married Kunti. Right? Like that. And then in the generation before that, Gandhari, she was the girl. Right? In other words, it means, just in our story, these are all the most, you know, qualified girls. Okay. But Drupad Maharaj decided to hand over his daughter to Arjuna only, and therefore contrived a particular way. There was a fish hanging on the inner roof of the house under the protection of a wheel. The condition was that out of the princely order, one must be able to pierce the fish's eyes through the wheel of protection, and no one would be allowed to look up at the target. On the ground, there was a water pot in which the target and wheel were reflected, and one had to fix his aim towards the target by looking at the trembling water in the pot. Maharaj, so that's our duty.
I'm out.
Yeah, you're out. Okay. What to do? Up to the trembling water, you were good. The trembling water, forget it.
So in Maharaj, in Gurukul, they are trying also? In Gurukul, yeah, they are trying?
Oh, no. No. Because you need focus. So in Gurukul, we don't do those. Maharaj Drupad well knew that only Arjuna, or alternatively Karna, could successfully carry out the plan. But still he wanted to hand his daughter to Arjuna. And in the assembly of the princely order, when Drishtadyumna, the brother of Draupadi, introduced all the princes to his grown-up sister, Karna was also present in the game. But Draupadi tactfully avoided Karna as the rival of Arjuna, and she expressed her desires through her brother Drishtadyumna that she was unable to accept anyone who was less than a Kshatriya. The Vaishyas and the Shudras are less important than the Kshatriyas. Karna was known as the son of a carpenter, a Shudra. Because the charioteers, they're carpenters, because they build the chariot. They're also known as mechanics, because they can make the construction, the engineering of it. So they're kind of in a unique position, because they're carpenter engineers, you know, engineers that are carpenters like that. So So Draupadi avoided Karna by this plea. When Arjuna, in the dress of a poor Brahmana, pierced the difficult target, everyone was astonished, right? Because there's only two alternatives, Karna or Arjuna. So if it wasn't Karna, then, you know, so the point is you avoid Karna, then it will be Arjuna. Right? Cause, but then this Brahmin shows up, they don't know who he is. When Arjuna, in the dress of a poor Brahmin, pierced the difficult target, everyone was astonished, and all of them, especially Karna, offered a stiff fight to Arjuna. But as usual, by the grace of Lord Krishna, he was able to emerge very successful in the princely fight, and thus gain the valuable hand of Krishna, or Draupadi. Arjuna was lamenting, remembering the incident in the absence of the Lord, by whose strength only he was so powerful, because again, he defeats all the kings. So we see is that he does all these amazing things all the time. At the same time, as we also have to appreciate another potency of the Lord, or Maya, and how Duryodhana, Karna, and that didn't understand this. It's obvious, the facts from the beginning. Like that. In other words, Karna could do whatever Arjuna could do, yes, but Arjuna can defeat Karna. And that was shown again and again. You know, because being able to do the same things is one thing, but defeating is another. The demon Maya Danava was an inhabitant of the forest Kandava, and when the Kandava forest was set on fire, he asked protection from Arjuna. Arjuna saved his life, and as a result of this, the demon felt obliged. He reciprocated by building a wonderful assembly house for the Pandavas, which attracted the extraordinary attention of all state princes. They felt the supernatural power of the Pandavas, and thus, without grudge, all of them submitted and paid tributes to the emperor. Okay, so here's another aspect. If Yudhishthira is going to be emperor, it should be that the others accept this fact. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So by seeing this assembly hall, then that's if they weren't already impressed by his good qualities, then nobody has an assembly hall like this. Mm-hmm. Because Krishna instructed that it should be dealt done with architecture that's not from here. So it was a mix of the heavenly and the Daivic and the Asuric architecture. Like that. So then you don't have that here. No one could build it. It's not even just, oh, hey, well, I can take some vernacular from there and we'll do that. You can't do it. It's just they are able to do stuff with their engineering that we can't do. We don't have the prowess. You know, it's even of here. We see that before there's these things on the planet, you know, Stonehenge, the pyramids, and then that Puchi, whatever it is.
Machu Picchu.
That they can't figure out how it's built. No one today can do it. There's all kinds of things and they can't do.
Moving the stones and all.
Yeah, all different things. It's just things that they can't do now. Mm. You know, even what is it? You know, going to the moon. They don't have the technology today that they had back in the 60s. Somehow or another, it's been lost to the world. Yes, okay. So, the demons possess wonderful and supernatural powers to create material wonders, because that's what for them it's all about. Right, the demigods is about serving the Lord, and then you also have the perks. The demons, it's not about serving the Lord, it's just about perks. So they actually have better facilities than the heavenly planets. They are always disturbing elements of the society. The modern demons are the harmful material scientists who create some material wonders for disturbance in the society. For example, the creation of nuclear weapons has caused some panic in human society. So it's a wonderful creation, but it only creates problems. Maya was also a materialist like that, and he knew the art of creating such wonderful things. And yet, Lord Krishna wanted to kill him. When he was chased both by the fire and the wheel of Lord Krishna, he took shelter of such a devotee as Arjuna, who saved him from the wrath of the fire of Lord Sri Krishna. Right? Because otherwise, then, you know, him being around, then you just create all these material wonders that bewilder people and cause disturbance. Yes. He took shelter of such a devotee as Arjuna, who saved him from the wrath of the fire of Lord Sri Krishna. Devotees are therefore more merciful than the Lord, and in devotional service, the mercy of a devotee is more valuable than the mercy of the Lord. Both the fire and the Lord ceased from chasing the demon as soon as both of them saw that the demon was given shelter by such a devotee as Arjuna. This demon, feeling obliged to Arjuna, wanted to do him some service to show his gratefulness. But Arjuna declined to accept anything from him in exchange, right? Because a kshatriya does his duty not for getting a benefit. It's not a business deal. Right? So Lord Sri Krishna, however, being pleased with Maya for his taking shelter of a devotee, asked him to render service under King Yudhishthira by building a wonderful assembly hall. And this will then prove, you know, nicely. It'll get, by this way, then Yudhishthira will become emperor of the world. By this, then there'll be the whole gambling match. Everything will come up. The process is that by the grace of the devotee, the mercy of the Lord is obtained. And by the mercy of the Lord, a chance to serve the Lord's devotee is obtained. The club of Bhimsena was also a gift of Maya Dhanava. So that's by the grace of Krishna, one gets Guru. By the grace of Guru, one gets Krishna. So that's the whole point. Because Krishna gives you the devotees, but it's the devotees who actually give you Krishna. Because Krishna is not just the Supreme Lord, he's the personality. So the devotees know the person. Right? So by the grace of the devotees, then you get to know Krishna as a person. So that's more special than just having God. Right? So that's so, yeah. Okay. It was Krishna alone that enabled Bhima to kill Jarasandha. Srila Prabhupada describes this incident as follows. Jarasandha was a relative of Kamsa, the maternal uncle of Krishna. And therefore, after Kamsa's death, King Jarasandha became a great enemy of Krishna, and there were many fights between Jarasandha and Krishna. Lord Krishna wanted to kill him, but he also wanted that those who served as military men for Jarasandha might not be killed. Therefore, a plan was adopted to kill him. Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna together went to Jarasandha in the dress of poor brahmanas and begged charity from King Jarasandha. Jarasandha never refused charity to any brahmanas, and he performed many sacrifices also. Yet he was not on a par with devotional service. So here's an example of piety, but no devotion. So that's the whole point. If we put the focus on piety, the demons can do that. But devotion, they can't. And piety is not going to come from itself. You have to have some piety to be able to generate piety. So if you don't have piety, how that's going to work? But devotional service is the ultimate piety. You can generate material piety. So even if you think material piety is important, you can only get it through devotional service. So this focus on developing material piety, you know, by devotees is actually useless. Because unless you're pious, you can't do it. Right? You can't do business unless you have some capital. You have capital, then you can invest, do business. You have to know business also. So the person with no capital and no knowledge of business, right, then how are we going to develop piety? Right? It's not going to happen. Only through devotional service. Right? So that's the point. Because otherwise, then, here, Jarasandha was one of the big demons. But he was very pious.
Maharaj? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a statement that formerly kings like Jarasandha would worship Lord Vishnu, but because they didn't accept Krishna, they're demons.
Yes. But it's also, they would have the element, they don't accept him as a person. You know, so there'll be that temporary form. That's one aspect. But in here, it's bringing out even a more subtle one. If you worship Vishnu and don't accept Krishna, yes, then you don't actually understand the Lord. So it's actually atheism.
Yes.
So that's the whole point, to accept the Lord and not accept something else, like his culture or his worship or his philosophy, then is actually atheism. So it's a subtler. Bhima and Arjuna asked Jarasandha for the facility of fighting him, and it was settled that Jarasandha would fight with Bhima only. So all of them were both guests and combatants of Jarasandha, and Bhima and Jarasandha fought every day for several days. Bhima became disappointed, but Krishna gave him hints about Jarasandha's being joined together as an infant, and thus Bhima dissected him again and so killed him. All the kings who were detained in the concentration camp to be killed before Mahabhairava were thus released by Bhima. Feeling thus obliged to the Pandavas, they paid tribute to King Yudhishthira. So concentration camps aren't new. They go back sometime.
Borrowed idea.
Huh? Borrowed. Yeah, borrowed idea. Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Sambhaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prima.
Hare Krishna.